Robbie, how are you?
Woo!
Oh,
how
man.
How you doing today?
I'm good. There's actually, this is one of those days where we've got a lot to discuss here.
We do.
And if we didn't, there are so many things I could talk about.
Like how your air conditioning is getting redone tomorrow. Full-blown redone.
Just new ductwork, new vents, just all of it, you know?
Yep.
Good.
About
good,
how you're
and
living.
Cheap, you know? Famously cheap HVAC issues.
That's the thing is, it was comped. It was free. So remarkable.
Yeah.
How about
people don't tell you that.
That you're living the bachelor life right now? There's that.
There's that. Well, and I, as I'm doing that, it's so hard finding shows that...
Candace left him, by the way.
Living the bachelor life.
Permanently.
When Candace is gone...
How's that going?
Which I say that she is actually weirdly back in town just for tonight between work things, and then we'll be out again tomorrow morning. But she's not here yet, but she may like walk across the back of the camera at some point.
Yeah,
people are going to be like...
my joke.
But whenever she leaves... Like there are plenty of shows that Candace watches that I don't watch, but there aren't that many shows that I watch that she doesn't.
Sure.
It's like it's the ones you would expect. Like Candace does not watch Invincible. Candace is never in a million years going to watch Andor. Like there are things like that that I'm just. And by the way, Andor, something else we could talk about, is dropping today. But that's not even what this is the lead into. I finally got a chance to go back and watch start Beef. Have you seen the show?
No. So what you just described, I'm that minus 30%. So there's almost no shows that I'm watching that you aren't watching, and definitely that Candace isn't watching.
Yeah. No, that's fair. So it's, and like, this has been one on my list forever. It's an A24 show on Netflix. And the reason I'm bringing it up, as I think we've referenced a few times, is it is directed, or about half the episodes are directed by the director of Thunderbolts.
Yep.
And I like to try to go back, especially with filmmakers that I'm not super familiar with, and catch some of their other stuff. And the buzz, I mean, Beef is one of those shows that cleaned up at awards season that year. And it is like, it's so good just in general. And I could talk about the show, but also it just makes me like, it makes me really excited for Thunderbolts, because all the storytelling instincts are just so dead on. Like, I love the way that the episodes are structured, and I can kind of see how that would carry over to like a team-based film like this. It's been like a heartening thing for me leading into this this final week before the new movie.
That's really good to hear. I've just been working and then playing some Warzone and sneaking in an episode of The Last of Us Season 2 here or there. And
still need to watch the second episode, by the way.
Yeah, here are the thing. Like there are so many things like you said we could get into. You and I are going to be together in like 5 days time from the time people are hearing this episode. Mm-hmm. And our hope is to catch up on a lot of stuff. So this might be a good time to check out Friends from Work Plus, because we want to do a Severance recap. We want to check in on The Last of Us and do a preview of that show. Although 2 episodes have already aired, 3 by the time that happens. But then, like we could talk about a more in-depth preview of Thunderbolts and get people excited there. We could talk about, going back and preparing for today's episode got me in the Black Widow headspace, which got me into this take that I did on Twitter, which was, I think it's the most critically, like it's the best movie that gets falsely accused of not being good in the MCU. Like it's the most unfairly criticized film, I should say. And I tweeted that, and that just got me thinking, like, I would love to do like a top 5, top 8, top 10 episode where I present what I think are the 5 most where the critical ranking is not matching, or like the vibe from the audience online is not matching what I think that film is. So anyways, there's so much to do. But I love these kind of episodes.
I was getting in the headspace here too with the Lauren Balfe Black Widow here.
Which I know that you don't love everything he does, because you've said before it can border on generic at times, but I think the Black Widow stuff is so good.
Like, I agree. I agree.
There are like five tracks from it that are memorable, meaning like melodies that I could sing right now. And I can't say that about that many films.
No, the Yelena theme.
Every
the
time you see
Natasha
her, that they keep it going
theme.
With Christoph Beck.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really, really special. And this is what I was going to say. That's what gets me so fired up about today, is that all those things are kind of coalescing into this. I just have a lot of energy. Yeah. I have a lot of energy about this MCU right now. Like about this saga so far that I made on YouTube that I'm holding up to the camera, but also, yeah, I have a lot of takes. I'm hearing really good stuff about Thunderbolts. I said to you behind the scenes, let me say this. Welcome back to Friends from Work. This is a podcast of all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by myself, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work. We're just going to blaze through so much stuff here as we're talking about. As a transition to Thunderbolts, I said to you off camera, maybe two or three times, I've said, look, I can see a world that Brave New World doesn't go over very well, or like doesn't work as well as they wanted it to when they announced it.
Right.
And I said that about a year ago. And I said, I could see a world that Agatha is a niche thing and doesn't work as well. Again, those are different things, but I just had this feeling. I have a feeling that Ironheart might not be the thing that they had hoped when they announced. But I said to you off camera, if Thunderbolts isn't reviewed well, that will hurt me. That one will break me a little bit, because if culture has shifted so much that making an A24 film inside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to a degree.
Yeah, yeah.
If like the Mission Impossible style of filmmaking doesn't work in the Marvel Cinematic Universe anymore, that'll hurt me. Like that, I am so certain this movie's going to be great that I'm almost a little bit nervous again, because I'm now carrying expectations that I haven't had. Yeah. Honestly, I can't even say that I had for Deadpool and Wolverine, because I didn't have that history there. So I haven't had these expectations since Guardians 3. I don't know. So,
This
one will hurt me. This one will hurt me if it's not good.
It's also going to be a really interesting like stress test of sorts for the MCU, because as you're talking about these other films of the last year or three or four, even the ones like the really high points, and this is not me minimizing those, like No Way Home and Deadpool and Wolverine, I think most people would view as certainly the commercial highlights of the post-Endgame era. But I think a lot of people would also say the qualitative critical highlights. But I think that those movies are doing something that is so, like, again, I don't mean this negatively, but it's like there's so much fan service built in, right? Like you're seeing Hugh Jackman's Wolverine for the first time and Deadpool for the first time together in the MCU. You're seeing all the Spider-Men together. Like there's something built in there where it kind of makes it beyond like your standard installment.
This doesn't have much of that.
But I think that this kind of goes back to it gives Marvel a chance to figure out what the new method is for achieving what they got so good at achieving in the 2010s. And not because like, oh, they used to have it and they lost it. I just mean like, it's all the cultural landscape's always evolving. Things that hit then, a method that worked well then, might not necessarily work well now. Like if you bring back all the same people, like just because they're bringing back the Russos and Marcus McFeely doesn't mean that Doomsday and Secret Wars will be as good as Infinity War and Endgame. It doesn't mean it won't. But it's like you can't just do the same thing. So I think that it's fair to say that over the last couple of years, they've been having to figure this out very publicly with very high stakes, in large part because of the position Disney corporate put Marvel Studios in. But this is the one where I'm like, okay, I look back at movies like Winter Soldier and Guardians and Ragnarok and Black Panther and these movies that were so unmistakably work of of a filmmaker and of a particular group of writers and creators, but also are like linchpins of what we consider to be like the MCU. And this feels like it has the potential to be exactly that. Like it feels so like its own thing, you know, but it's...
And I think another thing to add is it's also not leaning on the legacy side of things, which I do appreciate when they do that stuff.
Right.
But they are as current as possible with people like Florence Pugh, Sebastian Stan, David Harbour. Like like I kind of think back to how like Guardians, like even Ragnarok, Guardians, the ones you're mentioning, those were kind of like the coming out parties for Chris Pratt and, and not Chris Hemsworth as much, but like it was like a new take as well. They weren't relying on like Robert Downey Jr., who's 55 and like has been doing it for 30. So my point is like
I think Ragnarok was that in a lot of ways for Hemsworth, because prior to that, people didn't know him as anything except the kind of stoic, muscly guy.
Yeah. And this is like a young, current, fresh movie, even just with the names that you happen to stumble upon. And it's not just that Florence Pugh and Sebastian Stan and David Harbour and all these people are in the movie, and Julia Louise Dreyfus. I have the hardest time saying her name.
I know. I like resort to JLD.
I have to, because the Julia and then the L sound right afterwards doesn't work.
Yeah. Forget about it.
Not only are all of them in it and they're current, they're also off camera bought in. And that's like the same magic they had with Pratt at Guardians one time and RDJ at Iron Man one time. You know what I'm saying? Like it was off the camera as well. Like, no, this is really cool. It's Florence Pugh taking ownership of I'm Yelena. I saw an interview where she said that that's maybe her favorite character to play.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. That's really fun to hear. But I didn't know that.
Exactly. And that's my point. It's just like it's all this stuff kind of coming together.
Yeah.
And so I just would be stunned if those things didn't work. You have actors of that caliber, you have a director and a filmmaking team of that caliber, and you have this story that they've been sure of from day one. Like you've never heard about reshoots, you've heard about like this confidence behind the scenes, like and if that is not awesome. And then the trailer comes out and it's all this practical effects and it's just like, man, if that doesn't work. And
they're taking these big swings. And like I said this the other day, I think on the show, but like it is still mind boggling to me that Guardians of the Galaxy made more money in 2014 than Captain America, the Winter Soldier did. Like that's bananas.
Because of the big swing, you think?
I think so. I think because it was something where people that never would have thought that they would go see that movie, but maybe just didn't really want to see a Marvel movie, period, wound up there. I mean, that soundtrack was like on the top. It like topped like record sales charts that year.
Some of our Discord sleuths, it was a phenomenon. Let me know what the breakdown of that money was too, because I'm curious how much of that was the first week versus the long tail. With Guardians, was there a big word of mouth thing?
I think it was. Yeah. Like I think opening it was very night was not as tail.
Big, but then people went and they were like, holy crap, this movie's actually hilarious and heartfelt.
Which is also wild, because you would think that, I'm sure Winter Soldier had some of that too, right? Like you had a lot of people going right out the gate, but then like everyone's like, this movie's crazy good.
Yeah.
But still, like, so I think whenever you come out and do something. I wonder if
the tipping point is like the Candaces of the world. Candace would have freaked out about Guardians 1 and Winter Soldier. She would have been like, that was well done, but I don't ever need to think about it again.
I think that's right. I just think that there's something about like it's big swings, but it's also like it is such a difficult thing. The longer we do this to nail a Marvel movie, like I think that. And we knew it at the time, because I think all through the Infinity Saga, we weren't podcasting then, but we would talk towards the end. And I remember talking with other folks like, I can't believe they keep knocking these out of the park, like because there was just this stretch. And I just think it is a hard thing to do. You're serving so many masters, like you're having to figure out like how to navigate both things internally that we're probably not even aware of politically, like within the company, but you're also having to navigate like what's going on with Disney's release schedule, what's going on with Disney's priorities generally, like commercially. And then like just before even getting into like the art of it and how you're going to build on this like ever expanding mythos while also like doing something that someone can sit down in and have the same experience they had in Guardians, where like you have, it requires no investment in the MCU to have a blast watching Guardians of the Galaxy.
And I remember there being tentpole films that you and I had discussions about where you say if there was one that was going to flop, or where you go like Marvel's lost it and then they didn't. I remember those films. I remember calling you with Far From Home. I remember being like, if there ever was a movie that shouldn't work, I was over the MCU, not over it. I was like, wow, the MCU needs to let this sit. This was such a big thing with Endgame. It's only been months. Why are they doing it? And I, again, we can still discuss the release schedule and all that. But what I'm meaning is, I still went to the theater and I called you going, dude, it was still really awesome. It was really awesome still. And that should have been one that wasn't awesome. I remember feeling that way with Guardians, one we've talked about so many times. I remember feeling that way with Homecoming, because it was like, do we need another Spider-Man movie? And they had just done Civil War so well. And then it was like, well, it's still awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it was the third Spider-Man movie in 6 years.
So
like, I just think that like this one feels like it, I don't know. In some ways, like I feel like it has the potential to be what I thought Eternals might have been at the time when and I still kind of think it was like, I think that is Chloe Zhao's movie that was within the MCU. I think the problem with that movie is it's so long and there are so many characters and none of them have any, like you look at Guardians and they're, you know, you've got five main folks.
But the connectivity too, you know, the Eternals from like the source material of Eternals was a challenge for Chloe, no matter what. At least Thunderbolts, yes, it's not Iron Man, it's not Captain America, it's not Thor, but it's still people you recognize if you've watched Black Widow or if you've watched Ant-Man and the Wasp or whatever. So it's still got some of the connectivity that Eternals had no shot at doing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I'm not trying to like make people nervous bringing up Eternals, but I do think it's like, I like these moments where you see fingerprints on something in such a clear way. And I think this movie, like I think that the trick with that is normally I think you need to do that in a way that veers fun. Like I don't think that you can expect people to take that leap with you into like really creatively interesting directions in the context of a Marvel movie and be kind of like ponderous. Pressing. It can't, you know, it needs to be like something where you're like, holy cow, like Multiverse of Madness. Again, another movie that I think is kind of controversial within the fan community. But I think that like that movie is so boldly Sam Raimi, but it moves so quickly and it's so kind of fun and zany that you kind of just you can go there. You're not having to sit back there and like question what this is all heading towards. And this, I think, has way more polish than either of those. But I just like getting the sense that they're, I'm going to feel the same way about Fantastic Four, I think.
Right. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
The follow-up to this banger is hopefully another absolute banger that is so uniquely different, such a boundary pusher, but in a totally different way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So here we go. If you can't tell, we just have such good energy right now with this. Wow, I'm in a good headspace.
Sorry, last thing. Sinners, I love it. The Coogler film is,
I have not seen it.
Crazy. I haven't seen it yet either. I'm hoping to this week.
We have had multiple listeners reach out saying, have you guys seen Sinners? Can we get an episode on it? And that doesn't usually happen unless the film is spectacular. Otherwise, people don't really come to us for like non-Marvel opinions. Unless the movie's spectacular. And I've gotten like 4 or 5 messages about that. So it must be a thing.
Well, it's one that Candace and I kept seeing the trailers for at the theater.
But I don't even know what it's about. That's the thing. The trailers, I don't get it. I don't even know
And the trailer, like I found, this is one of those situations where the trailer did not make me want to see the movie at all. Like I wasn't like, I hate this, never, but I wasn't like, oh, like I need to go see it. Like it was just, I didn't think that the trailer team did a great job on that one. But then I started hearing all this stuff and I think it debuted at 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. One guy gave like, it a rotten score.
That's crazy. Ryan Coogler, it's really cool to see that he can create, like, after reinvigorating the Rocky franchise, after creating one of the most successful franchises within the MCU, certainly
one
of the widest reaching. Yeah. Like, to then come up with his own, like, original story and it be such a win. And I just forget, he's 38 years old. Yeah, and he's already, like, one of the top grossing directors of, I mean, he's probably, like, on a short list, period, but certainly of the last 10 years. So that's, like, something else that we'll have to talk about. But, yeah, a lot of good energy and a lot of it that is at least, like, MCU adjacent, because, again, Coogler is obviously working on another Black Panther film as well.
All right, let's get into Thunderbolts. I want to tell people quickly about three ways that you can support this podcast if you're into what we do. One, this might be a good time to check out Friends from Work Plus. We're going to have some bonus episodes coming up in the next few months while we're not on the main feed and during some of these breaks. There will be some really fun bonus episodes and episodes that we've been hinting at for a while. Those will be on Friends from Work Plus. You can sign up. There's two different tiers. It's a way to financially support the podcast. That's one. Two, we have a new partner, Omaj.com. Omaj, they make incredible merchandise like the shirt that Robbie's wearing. We talked about it at length in our Daredevil finale episode.
So soft.
But if you didn't hear our pitch there, it's legit. Here's all I got to say. It's legitimately unbelievable printing, and they have the license for your favorite things. So, like, it's not adjacent to Marvel. You can get that kind of shirt that Robbie's wearing. You can get other Marvel gear, Star Wars gear, Disney gear, and then also sports gear. So I have some, like, Mariner stuff on the way, a Captain America shirt, a Spider-Man logo shirt. Really, really good stuff. If you're going to support Omaj, it helps us greatly if you use the referral link in the show notes or the referral link you find on the Discord channels. But seriously, I have friends who buy their stuff already for, like, sports stuff. So it's really cool that we get to partner with them, and it would help us greatly if you use the link in the show notes. And the third thing I'll say is, if you're in the Texas area, specifically Austin, Robbie and I are going to be live hanging out at Austin Books and Comics on Saturday, May 3, which is Free Comic Book Day. And we're going to be there most of the day, probably, I don't know, don't quote me on this, 9 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon or something, hanging out. And some of that time, we're going to just be talking to you guys, saying hi, checking out the comics ourselves. But we're also going to be doing some free giveaways for both us and Austin Books and Comics. And hopefully, we have a PA, we're going to be doing a live podcast episode. We're currently brainstorming what that could look like, because we know that not everyone will have seen Thunderbolts by that day. It's only one day after the release.
We don't care, though. We're just going to be shouting spoilers.
We're just
going to
spoil everything.
It's what you get.
It's what you get if you show up. No, but come hang out. Maybe you can hop on an episode, ask us a question that, you know, something we're talking about. It'd just be really fun. So if you're in the Texas area, come say hi to us. It would mean a lot to meet some of you and put some faces to names. So those are the three things. Okay, I want to go through. We do this thing called the Saga So Far. Every time there's a new film or a new project in the MCU where we just want to kind of refresh your brains with where these characters, where these themes have been in the MCU so that you feel the most ready to go into the new film. And I'll say we have an 11-minute version of this with clips from all the shows we're talking about, narrated by me, written by Robbie, on YouTube now. That you should go watch. And I say this because I know a lot of people, even MCU fans out there that are diehard fans, have lost track of where some things have been and where things are currently. This is a great 11-minute way. And then today's episode's a good, 30 minutes left way of getting your mind right for the film. But the YouTube video is really helpful, especially if you're going with someone who let's say they're a Florence Pugh fan, but they don't know a lot. This is a good way to kind of remind them where these characters have been, give them a little bit of history so that they can appreciate the film more the first time they're there. And with the A24 marketing, you may be getting some new people coming to this film that wouldn't have otherwise gone. So this might be a good way to get them refreshed. Okay. Go ahead.
That is one of the original goals of these friendly reminder videos, is not just like, if you're listening to this podcast, we still think that you will get something out of it, but there's a chance that you have probably seen most of the things we're referencing. But sometimes your friend or girlfriend or boyfriend or spouse or parents or whoever that you think that they might like Thunderbolts. I think this is maybe more than any other Marvel movie in, you know, the last, again, last year or two would fit that description, a movie that non-Marvel fans might want to go see. Then this is a good, a quick way to kind of give them the lowdown.
I saw my friend Josh today. He said, what have you been up to? I said, well, I'm working on this video. And his wife, Becca, walked in and Becca says, oh yeah, Thunderbolts, what is that? And I said, well, I have an 11-minute video for you. That's the best way for me to explain what it is. Okay, we'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Okay, man, I've been looking forward to this. These are always fun, but this is a fun one because there are so many threads. If you watch our video, we kind of break it down by movie, where a lot of these characters originate, where we last saw them, and we'll kind of move into that. But I think that one thing that's fun about this specifically is that even though we do have all these protagonists coming in that originated as either side characters or villains in other projects, I think that there's a lot more connective tissue than you might think, or certainly like they share an origin point. And so I think it's worth kind of going back and looking at this more through the lens of like the rise of S.H.I.E.L.D. and what kind of came up around that and through that. If you look at it and go back to like the SSR, the Strategic Scientific Reserve that Howard Stark and Peggy Carter and
no
Tommy
abbreviating
Lee
stuff
character.
Like that on this podcast. Okay, this is the we're trying to talk to Steve Rogers today, so don't shorten that's SSR.
Fair. That's
okay.
Fair. That's fair. Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones character who I can't ever remember the name of in the moment. In the first Captain America movie, we see they start that as kind of the forerunner of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then you see in the back half of the 20th century that progress further and further into what we eventually are introduced to as S.H.I.E.L.D., which is run by Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury. We meet the organization.
It's run by Sam Jackson, but in flashbacks, we see that it's been run by Hank Pym and Howard Stark, and like for years it's been other people, but the current version is Nick Fury.
Yeah, just as a which I note. Think that's actually an important side note though, because in that period you have a lot of people come into contact with S.H.I.E.L.D. that get their start working with S.H.I.E.L.D. So Hank Pym is one of those people, and Hank Pym in that period is working with Bill Foster, who is another guy kind of working on the quantum side of things, and also, I think is the first one to go like giant size rather than just shrinking like Hank did.
Yeah.
And so
Hank
he went
Pym
by.
Is the original Ant-Man, by the way.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to keep dumbing it down. So keep going, but I'm going to just throw those little tidbits in there. Keep going.
No, I like that. But I think we'll come back to that, to Bill Foster and Hank Pym for one character in particular. But I think that it's worth looking at the rise of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. knowing that other things were kind of going on around that too. Like we know S.H.I.E.L.D. is sort of the mainline intelligence agency, but we also learned eventually, talking about Winter Soldier, that almost from the get-go, S.H.I.E.L.D. was infiltrated by Hydra that was kind of running it from the shadows. Hydra had begun as like a fascist, like even further right wing of the Nazi party in Germany.
And specifically kind of science based.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like scientists. You may question their science, but.
Right. I mean, they accomplished some really, I mean, you know, effective things, trains running on time and all that. But, meanwhile, there's also the Red Room, which is the more kind of like Soviet based side of this. And we learn about the Red Room early on in the context of Natasha. We know that that's where she was raised. But kind of bringing it to the first movie that we're looking at here, we also learned that, like, from the beginning, this was one of those organizations that is sort of competing with S.H.I.E.L.D. to kind of be on the front lines of both, like, I think technological innovation and certainly, like, within the espionage sphere, but also, I think, just kind of like amassing power and influence in a similar way to what Hydra was doing and in a similar way to what like Nick Fury winds up doing, you know, in a more like morally appropriate way, I guess.
That is really interesting because you think about how like once S.H.I.E.L.D. realized that it needed to be on the forefront of all these things, not just the stuff they started with, but now superheroes are an avenue that they can be on the forefront of. They start working with people like Captain America. Well, at the same time, then the Red Room employs their version of it with Red Guardian.
Yeah.
In like this race to keep up with the forefront of power, essentially.
Well, and Hydra with the Winter Soldier.
Same thing. Same thing. Within S.H.I.E.L.D. or kind of Hydra's his own thing, but infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. trying to do the same kind of thing using the same methods, essentially.
Yeah. And you have like Isaiah Bradley showing up as again, kind of a Captain America for S.H.I.E.L.D. And so, yeah, I think it's this like arms race that's going on really throughout the Cold War period. But then that is all, I think, important background, even the Hydra Winter Soldier piece. As we go into Black Widow, which, like you said earlier, I think is I would say like undoubtedly the most important project to have seen before Thunderbolts, if you're not going to see anything else.
And it's part of the reason that I have confidence in the movie in general, because I rewatched Black Widow this weekend, and I really love it. And I think people forget how much of that film is spectacular, how much they're doing well in that. Mm-hmm. As a quick side note. But yeah, that's where we meet a lot of these characters. In fact, I think we circled the three of the main team are from that film. Red Guardian, Yelena Belova. Red Guardian's her father. Let me back up. Red Guardian, yeah, Yelena Belova. Before I start going through all those. And Taskmaster. So maybe something you missed if you're just an average fan. No, I shouldn't say that. So maybe something that was missed by a lot of just casual fans is that at the very beginning of the film, Red Guardian, who is Alexei, he is the father figure of this fake put together family from the Soviets. They're living in America in Ohio with his wife and his two daughters, and his two daughters being Natasha Romanoff, who we later learned to be the Black Widow, and Yelena Belova, who now is in this film.
And daughters and air quotes there.
Right. None of them are actually related. It's just a fake family they put together. But they have to live an undercover kind of normal life. They live in Ohio and they have dinner on the table and they play at the playground and that kind of stuff. But early on in that movie, they are forced to flee America and head back to Russia, although they stop in Cuba. They're actually fleeing SHIELD cars.
Yeah.
So speaking of the whole tie-in here, it's SHIELD trucks that are shooting at the airplane they're fleeing in. So anyways, quick side note, that kind of ties it all together. But the four of them flee. And then in one of the darkest sequences, I think, in the MCU, when you factor in the subject matter, Alexei, who apparently like cares about his daughters, turns them over willingly, sedated, to the Red Room to basically be trained to be super female assassins. And it's even darker than that because they're kind of borderline tortured. And if they're not good enough, they just get killed. And
it's definitely like human trafficking.
Right. And Dreykov sees them all as expendable. That's why he chooses girls. He actually talks about that. Then no one cares about girls. So that's why he trains them. So Yelena and Natasha are trained at an early age. Actually, when we see them in Black Widow, Natasha has already been through the Red Room once. And you can find out that from Yelena, you actually can sometimes go through it multiple times, 6-7 times. Yeah,
that's right. That's a good call. Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note too, Natasha is old enough at that stage where you get the sense that she was aware that this was an assignment. Like all four of them, like her and Red Guardian and her mom, Melina, and then her little sister, Yelena, are all just separate Russian sleeper agents. And so I think everyone
kind of... Herod the Great and Alexander the Great.
That's the MCU. We haven't gotten... Eternals didn't even give us ancient Rome yet.
Wait, was Alexander the Great Greek or Roman? He was Roman.
He was Greek.
Greek? Dang
it. He was technically Macedonian, I think.
Dang it, then take that back too.
But come on, where's all your Assassin's Creed?
I know this Odyssey is not knowledge. This is not a history podcast. Okay, everyone just back off.
Anyway, I think I point that out because yes, they sort of get into this family rhythm, but I think the rest of the family is still recognizing like this is a couple year assignment. Yelena is young enough, like she's a small girl, and I think that you can see that the lines are a lot more blurred there. Mm-hmm. Like that's still a formative time, and I think it's harder for her to understand that she's not really supposed to treat Natasha as her sister or Alexei as her dad. And so I think that kind of makes it all the more tragic when Alexei hands her over, because I think
it's
again
so sad.
Like Natasha knows this is my fellow agent Alexei, that's he's like responding to the command of his superior. But Yelena interprets that, her dad's just giving her away. And so that's the sort of background. That's the last we see of that character until the flash forward to 2016, when we kind of start meet back up with all these folks.
Right. So obviously when Yelena and Natasha are grown up, they have some resentment towards their quote unquote father and mother, but they decide that, I guess Natasha thought she had taken down Dreykov in the Red Room at a different time, including Dreykov's youngest daughter. That's going to matter. in an explosion, her and Clint Barton, as her kind of last thing she has to do to get into S.H.I.E.L.D. after she decides to defect from the Red Room. This is Natasha now. As kind of her last move, she blows up the like little townhome that Dracov is in, but also his daughter is in. Turns out Dracov didn't die and his daughter doesn't die, but she thinks she killed him and that haunts her for a long time.
There's a scene that you probably remember of Natasha interrogating Loki, and they bring up this instance specifically.
Right. So this was not, Avengers. This was not made up 10 years later. They had this idea in 2012 as well, or some versions of it, you know? But when Yelena and Natasha finally meet and kind of like hash some of this out, just what you said is true. Yelena views those times as more formative, and it's extra hurtful for her to find out that they weren't really a family. Like, that was the only family she had. Kind of same with Natasha. So while the family is healing, they're still pretty pissed off at their quote-unquote mom and dad for turning them in. But they decide, you know what, we're taking down the Red Room and Dracov once and for all. And that's where they need Alexei to find where it is. And he doesn't know, but he says your mom would know. And so they end up getting the whole family together. And I think I would just basically say, like, they do take the Red Room down, and I think there's some kind of conversion that happens there a little bit, right? Like, I think they a little bit see how ridiculous it is. And I point that out because it'll be interesting to see the role that Red Guardian plays in this film, because he's mostly a buffoon in the Black Widow films, but there are a couple moments where he shows some signs of sweetness with Yelena specifically, more than Natasha. That he does not apologize, but at the very end of the film, he does kind of feel bad. He says, like, I would mess it up if I talked. Like, he does.
There are a couple of, the American Pie moment.
Well, in the most recent trailer of Thunderbolts, which actually really moved me, is narrated by Red Guardian saying, we've all made mistakes. And then it cuts to Florence Pugh going, crying, but I've made so many. And I'm going to get emotional right now. Then he hugs her and says, like, I don't judge you by your mistakes. So, like, this might be the beginning of him being a little less of a buffoon and a little more of a mentor to Toru Yelena. I don't know that.
Well, and I think that also, you know, I don't think that Alexei really understood exactly what the Red Room was. Now, it doesn't absolve him of just kind of abandoning Yelena. But, you know, we find out that Yelena going through the Red Room was not the same thing as Natasha going through the Red Room, because by the time Yelena goes through, Dracov is now like he's put this like chemical subjugation into effect, so that it's not just like brainwashing like traditionally or like
they conditioning. Physically can't control their body.
So it's like they're aware the whole time. They know what they're doing, but they can't do anything about it. And so not only did he hand Yelena over to like lose any semblance of a normal life, he also gave her over to lose free will for, you know, 20 years. And so when we meet back up with her, it's right at the point when she's getting freed from mind control. And that's a big part of why she wants to bring Natasha and Alexei back together and bring the Red Room down, because like her, there are all these other widows around the world that have also had their free will taken from them. And so I think that that's, you know, that's like the inciting incident behind the movie in a lot of ways. But I think it's also going to be a big factor, I would think, going into Thunderbolts, because that's like, it's something that we'll also talk about with Bucky Barnes, but that's something that's been dealt with a lot more already with Bucky.
This is where the Saga So Far episodes become really fun, because we can just retell the plots of films all day long, but really you should just go watch them. But really, I think it's fun to start looking at emotionally, where are these characters when we left them? And so if you put yourself in Yelena's shoes for a second, she is this little girl who has incredibly traumatic trafficking experiences throughout her young life, and realizes that her parents aren't her real parents and they didn't really care. And then even her sister says some hurtful things like, I didn't really care either. And she did care. And so she was out there, and then she got her heart broken because of that. Well, then she is chemically subjugated to do stuff she doesn't want to do. So doesn't even have like her own free will for 20 years. And not to mention she didn't when she was a kid either. And, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden she's freed because of this antidote that's created. And so she makes it her mission to free other widows. But then on top of that, the one kind of family she has, the fake family, Natasha, her closest friend and sister, dies. And so now she's just really left questioning everything. Like,
yeah,
like Natasha's not here anymore. Like, what is my purpose? That's literally a line from the trailer. Do you feel fulfilled? Yeah. And so she's going to turn back to maybe doing contract kills for JLD because it's what she knows and what she's done her whole life. She's freed a lot of the widows already, but maybe that's not giving her purpose. And, you know, we see her in Hawkeye messing around with Kate, but maybe that's not giving her purpose. And I could see her like just not even knowing, like all the Avengers stuff has died down. Like what is she even working towards? What is her point of being here?
Yeah.
And then I think it's also important to kind of contrast that as well to Red Guardian, who felt betrayed by his country, then turns against his country and takes down the Red Room.
Yeah.
Although it's like Hydra. It's like a faction of his country, essentially. It's not, you know, Russia. But he doesn't feel purpose in Red Guardian. Maybe he's not emotionally or socially intelligent enough to be thinking about that, but Yelena is. But now all of a sudden Yelena's back in his life, and maybe that's one of the only things that does give him purpose.
I mean, I do think it is intentional. Like when you watch Black Widow, this is something I love about the MCU in general. You can often watch a later installment and think like, oh, this is, you know, like a left turn. They're now making this character more jokey or more serious or whatever. But I think that often it is rooted in something. Like there are some seeds from prior films. It's just whether or not people then choose to follow up on them. And I think with Alexei, there was an intentional choice to make him much less like of the buffoon in the flashback sequences. Like you get the sense that when he's playing the dad, it's not
he's
that
doing
it
well.
He's doing it well, but also he's generally like he takes himself seriously. He's not like he seems much more like he's socially aware in that he knows kind of how to coax the girls into the car to get out and like flee the scene in time. He knows how to like cheer them up and make them not as afraid. He kind of knows obviously how to be undercover in that way. Like all these things that by the time,
even he talks to Dracov in that flashback, he's not like joking around.
Right. Yeah. Like you can tell that what happens is he goes from being someone that,
yeah, good point,
has a lot of pride to then being holed away, left to die in this Russian prison. And so whenever we meet him again, you know, he's a mess. He's gained a ton of weight. He's got the scraggly beard. He just generally looks terrible and unhealthy. And so like with that, you see that he's kind of created this fantasy that he has to live in where he's like a legend. You know, because that's the only way he can justify his current existence being so pathetic is by looking at it as like the sunset years of this icon. And so he compares himself to Captain America, even though like obviously he never met Steve Rogers and no one ever really heard of Red Guardian, you know, outside of probably these very like isolated incidents that were more in the locale.
And Steve got celebrated in a way that he wished he had been, right?
Yeah. So I think, you know, like even in Black Widow, that's another scene that is played for laughs, but it's also a kind of a gut punch where he's reunited with Natasha and Yelena for the first time. And you can tell, especially like Yelena is wanting to have some kind of connection for, you know, having not seen him for 20 years. And the first thing that he wants to talk about is whether Steve Rogers has ever mentioned him to Natasha. And it's such this like,
it is really funny though.
No, it is. It's like the kind of Thor, like the Thor jokes in Endgame where it kind of cuts both ways, but
For sure.
I think that provides like these little glimpses. Like we see he's not an idiot, you know, like he has probably lost a lot of his like humanity in a very different way being in a prison like that. And I think that in that he's also lost the ability, at least at first, to empathize with Yelena. And so I think that you do start to see flashes of that. But I, you know, we don't know, whereas Yelena, like you said, we've seen her in Hawkeye. We know that she has been doing some contract killing stuff. We know that she's been working with JLD. But we have no idea what Alexi's been doing since the end of Black Widow, which, as a reminder for people that are not up on all these things, takes place basically right after the events of Civil War. So we don't know if Alexi was blipped like Yelena was. We don't know whether he's been with Melina. We don't know whether one of them was dusted and the other wasn't. If he's trying to pursue like a hero career again in some way, or if he's
like, how is he undercover, even out and about now? Yeah. Because we haven't been seeing him doing anything.
But again, it's like he was put into prison by Dracov, kind of betraying him, and Dracov's gone now. So I don't know if anybody would be like on the hunt for him or not.
So there's a lot of unknown there and some purposelessness there. And that's the main theme from Yelena too. Like she was also blipped. I forgot about that. So you're right. Like that's another added traumatic event where she just doesn't know what to do.
I think it adds to the tragedy of Natasha's death, because at least from our perspective as viewers, Natasha was alive through the entire blip, you know, right up until the very end when she sacrifices herself to bring everybody back.
But she thought Yelena was gone during that time, which she was. Right. And as soon as Yelena comes back,
Natasha's gone. So it's like this, if Yelena had not been blipped, then she and Natasha would have had that 5 years together to go through. But instead it was like kind of a gut punch where she comes back and like out of nowhere, Natasha's just gone.
Mm-hmm. And how differently might have that played out? Maybe Yelena would have gone with her to,
or at least like probably been on the
Vormir,
or like in the Avengers mansion, you know, or compound, if nothing else.
Or maybe Natasha would have been a little less willing to sacrifice herself if she knew she had a living family member still that needed her, you know, or like, I don't know, maybe that would have been a different discussion. Because she says, like, the Avengers, this is my family, this is all. Well, that's because Yelena's also been gone for 5 years now, too, at this point.
Yeah. And which I think leads into the third character from Black Widow, too.
Yeah, we got to keep it going. This is a smaller character, but we talked about Dracov's daughter being a casualty of this explosion. Well, it turns out she didn't die. And in a really sadistic way, Dracov implanted a chip into her brain and kind of to salvage her body, makes her like half computer, half human soldier fighting person who has the ability, because of this computer chip, to mirror any fighting style of someone that person's about to take on. So Dracov has this daughter of his. By the way, you don't know it's his daughter till the very end, but we call her Taskmaster, and she studies like the fighting art of Captain America and Black Panther and then emulates those, including a very kind of cool fight scene against Natasha where she basically mirrors what Natasha's doing. So basically it makes her kind of a super soldier, but at the very end, she is also freed from this chemical subjugation when Dracov is killed. They use the same antidote and free her. But what we don't know, as you said in this script, is we don't know how much of her humanity is left. Is it, yes, she's free now, but is she still just a computer? She hardly talks in the film. She looks like an absolute badass, but she hardly talks in the movie. So hard to know how much is left there, but they leave her with the other freed widows. And that's the last we see of her.
Yeah. So like, has Yelena stayed in contact with her in any way? Because obviously, like we do know from Hawkeye that Yelena has stayed in contact with other widows that she's working with, trying to free widows around the world. So you could see, I mean, they initially at the end of the movie, like they kind of claim Taskmaster as one of their own. So, but yeah, like you said, again, with the other two, and I think that this goes, we're going to repeat this with each of these characters. Like, what does someone like that now do with themselves after, like, your entire, like, literally her life, like, crashed and burned, like, all on this, like, floating fortress? Like, her dad is gone, which is good for her, but he's gone. Her entire, like, her profession and livelihood and all of that, if you think of it in those terms, is gone. And so, yeah, it's like you're now like a super computer killing machine, and like there aren't that many nice ways to use right. that skill set.
Yeah, right. And she's never had a life. She's never had any social grow up, like nothing. She's been a computer since
it's a more extreme, in a lot of ways, a more extreme version of what has happened to Yelena specifically. With the one difference being Taskmaster had, I assume, like a much more normal childhood as Dreykov's daughter.
Up until what? She was maybe 7 at that point? 8, I'm guessing?
Probably the same age that Yelena was, I guess. But yeah,
although if Dreykov was willing to do this to other girls, I can't imagine that part was very normal either, but yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's 3 of the characters. Couple others that you need to know about. Ghost. Let's jump to Ghost.
Yeah.
Ghost is a character named Ava Starr, and we only have seen her in one film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, in 2018. And in that film, she is kind of the villain of the film, although not doing awful stuff. But she is basically, because of a childhood accident, she lost her parents and gained the ability to phase through objects, kind of like what Vision can do. So she can walk through walls. She can instantly disappear, go watch our YouTube video, and pop out different places. But by doing that, she's very much in pain and feels like it is killing her. And so she is also an ex-SHIELD person, or at some point worked with SHIELD to become like a super secret spy assassin. Mm-hmm. Again, you get where we're going with this. And so when she did a bunch of contract kills and things like that for them, she was still hurting from this stuff. And then in that film, she finds a way to basically get healed. Bill Foster is working with her, takes her in, and is helping her try to find some way. And they really can't.
The Bill Foster reference from earlier is coming back.
That's right. That's right. We really couldn't find a way until they meet Hank Pym and see that Hank Pym and Janet are kind of working on some quantum stuff, that quantum energy they think could stop the phasing. And just to kind of keep this quick, it does stop the phasing, and they end up healing her. And at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, she kind of decides, like, I'm going to go on the run. I'm not going to keep killing people, I think, is kind of the vibe. Like, she's a changed person, I think.
Or but at least, same like, thing. Stay underground.
Yeah, right. But the same thing, though. Like, but what do you do then 6 years later? If she was blipped, we don't know. Like, did she need more healing particles? Did she need, like, healing particle sessions? In which case, did she really miss out on that when Janet and Hank and Hope are all dusted away in Infinity War? Did she miss out on that healing?
That's something that I had never really thought about until we were prepping for this movie. Because, yeah, I think she does need, you know, transfusions, however you would think of it, of this, like, quantum energy. And even if it was just the one batch, you know, even if it didn't need to be regular, the batch that Scott is getting is the one that he was stuck in the quantum realm with for 5 years. So we don't know, like, the whole reason she was able to kind of stop the degenerative effect of the power set that she has, but also stop her life of crime, I guess, to put it like simply, is because she had this access to the quantum energy. So yeah, like, if she blipped and came back, then I assume that wasn't a factor. But if she didn't, then that would have been like a really rough turn of events for her, because Scott was trapped in the quantum realm and everybody else, Hope and Hank and Janet, were all dusted.
It's one of the things that makes Thunderbolt so fascinating, because it's not following up on necessarily a bunch of dangling threads, but it is playing with a lot of characters that we don't know a ton about. So There's a ton of wiggle room to fill in as much or as little of all of that as you want. They may not ever go into what Ghost was doing for the last 6 years. They may not go into that, but they could, and it all could work because it's all just kind of like, I don't think during Avengers Infinity War, you're thinking, I wonder what Ava Starr is doing. Like, why don't they have, but now a movie like this can follow up on that and be like, yeah, this is what she was doing. She was blipped or maybe it doesn't follow up at all. But my point is, like, it's a bunch of characters that don't actually have that much information about them.
Well, and I think that that's a really good point too, because you keep talking about the sort of aimlessness that a lot of these characters are experiencing. And I love that this movie is clearly like, that is the main defining feature of each of the members of the team proper. And I like that none of them ended on like big cliffhanger notes where it's like, what's going to happen next? Because that would almost cut against that sort of aimlessness feeling. Like, I like that we're picking up with all these characters more or less in places where, like, if we had not seen them again, you wouldn't have thought that there was any like anything left to explore. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But I don't view it as superfluous. I think that, like, it works here because that is what the movie's trying to do. It's trying to tell a story about, like, picking up from a place like that when there's no obvious next step.
Right. And kind of picking up from forgotten characters to some degree. I want to talk about Bucky Barnes last because of that, intentionally save him for last. So then that leaves us with John Walker, who it's the exact same story. A decorated military guy who is so good at his job that he gets promoted all the way to the new Captain America when the government decides they want him as a white Captain America instead of Sam Wilson as a black Captain America. And so he gets made Captain America. Now, again, from his perspective, he didn't choose that. He's like, well, great, I'll do this. And from his perspective, he's doing the best he can, but he feels hopelessly outmatched because he doesn't have any super soldier serum. So surrounded by a bunch of other super soldiers, he is not as strong. And especially when you factor in that Captain America, the original, the OG, Steve Rogers, was a super soldier. Living up to that name is hard as just an everyday man. So he does take the serum. However, whether it's because it's a faulty serum or whether it's because it's a serum that leans heavier into like character defects that were already in you, it enhances his strength, yes, but it also enhances his irritability and some of his decision-making.
Aggression.
And his aggression. And so he makes some very public mistakes. He kills a guy that he shouldn't have, and everyone sees it. And so he is stripped of his title as Captain America. And actually, upon rewatching that, I think I undersold how much they're trying to play into that because he does all these little ticks.
Yeah, yeah.
In the show. And I think they're trying to show you, like, it's messing with his brain. Like, I'm strong, but also... something's like telling me to, like, a bad, you know, good angel, bad angel on his shoulder, you know, a devil on his shoulder.
I think based on the clips that we've gotten from Thunderbolts that we're going to find him in a much more stable place. But I do think it's worth noting again, kind of like what we were saying with Alexi, that there are signs earlier in the series too, that he is both, like, I think he is a good guy and he's a well-meaning guy, but he also has a temper in a way that Steve Rogers didn't. And so you see, like, even before he takes the serum, when they're, like, running these raids trying to find the Flag Smashers, like, he's, like, kicking in doors and shouting in people's faces. And it's because, in part, you can feel the strain, like, the pressure on him to be not only, like, to live up to Steve Rogers, who is essentially, like, the Superman of
unlivable.
like just like a kind of perfect person. And then, like, which is the whole reason why Erskine gave Rogers the formula. But then, the fact that he doesn't have, like, even compared to Bucky and Sam, like, at least Sam's got, like, the wings. And so you see it's justified, but also you see that even before the formula, he's acting in ways that you would not ever see Steve Rogers act. And so, then you put the formula in there too. So he gets, like, haywire.
He gets discharged from that role, but then we see JLD again, just like she does, sneak up.
And he's discharged after he decapitate somebody with a Captain America shield.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Publicly, but, in daylight.
Right. It's not a good look, like I said, with everyone filming it. But JLD kind of promotes him from whatever her organization is to this U.S. agent where he gets a new suit. It's like basically the same suit, but it's black. And he's now working with her to some degree. But again, we don't see how much. We don't see if he's blipped. I think it's really interesting as the theme of this whole episode that in a few of the clips we've seen from the Thunderbolts trailer, it shows a shot of him sitting in his living room. He's got a baby now with his girlfriend at the time in Falcon Winter Soldier. Now I think she's wife, but I thought it was girlfriend at the time when they were just dating. Whatever. He's got a baby with this other girl, but it just shows him like doom scrolling Twitter or something. Yeah. And just clearly depressed, like the baby's crying and he's not attending to the baby, just clearly like distant, not there, the typical like depression from a father that you see. And it's interesting they include that again, because again, now we have a guy who used to work for the government, who got discharged and now has no purpose in his brain. He can't redeem his career. Even this child is not fulfilling him maybe in ways he thought. And so a same kind of thing, like what's his purpose? What's he going to do? What's he here for? Again, it matters.
And I do think, it matters that, like these other people, he is so good at this specific thing. Like, it's not like Tony Stark or Bruce Banner, where if they weren't being superheroes, they would also have like they also have like a full thriving career because they're scientists or they're running massive companies. Like, he has worked his entire life to be this like elite soldier and climbed the ranks, got all these medals. So what do you do with that skill set now? Because he could go get a job,
at Baskin Robbins.
Right. But it's like he's not.
Baskin Robbins always
he's
knows.
He's got to be. That's the thing. They would know. They would find the video. So true. But it's like, what are you going to do that makes you feel like that wasn't all just a massive waste of time?
And that's what this movie's going to explore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect setup. The reason I wanted to address Bucky Barnes last is because, one, he's probably the character that most fans know the most about. He's been around since one of the earliest entries into the MCU with Captain America, the First Avenger. Mm-hmm. And he was Steve Rogers' best friend. And you know the story. Steve thought he watched him fall to his death. And he gets saved by Hydra, only to be turned into a secret weapon. Super soldier serum, vibranium arm, becomes like a super killer. And he's literally mind controlled. But here's why he's last. Because all those characters kind of fit into a separate bucket. But Bucky, in the most recent development, seems like he's already done a lot of this work. Bucky is further down the line emotionally, mentally, than these characters are, because we saw him have to make amends with all of his past kills. He's gotten his brain cleaned out by Wakanda. So he's no longer mind controlled. He's no longer also haunted as much.
If you're going to go through therapy, Wakanda's probably the place to do it.
Seems pretty smart. I love that he has a special tie to Wakanda. They've hinted at that like five times, and I love it for some reason.
Yeah.
But he's done that work already. And then he also did the work with the actual people that he killed as Winter Soldier, apologizing to them or making amends with them in some way. And then in Brave New World, we see that he's actually running for Senate. So he's a fascinating one here because it seems like he's the ringleader as far as if the government is saying maybe these guys could do it, that he would be the one to be like recruiting them or being like, we can do it. But I'm interested to see how they handle his character because of that. They've already done the work with him.
Yeah. Well, and I do think I think it's intentional that we pick up with him when he is pursuing something. Like, you're right. Like, it separates him from all these other people. And I think that, like, obviously we could start Thunderbolts and maybe a lot of the characters have other things going and I don't feel like that's where they're heading. But I do think, even if that were the case, it's an intentional choice to have the cameo with Bucky in Brave New World. I think was arguably a bit like not forced, but it wasn't necessarily like ground that needed to be covered between him and Sam. Like it was similar to a lot of conversations they had had. And
I disagree, but keep going.
I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it.
I disagree.
I'm just saying narratively, did it do anything other than
if you keep it up, I'm going to mouth fart at you. If you keep it up,
other than reveal that he is running for Congress. So my point is they went out of their way, I think, to show a version of Bucky that is a lot more polished, that has like kind of like a light in his eyes that we hadn't really seen for a while. Like he doesn't seem haunted in the way that he always has been since we were reintroduced to him in the Winter Soldier film. So I do think that he's being put in this position to be the guy that has done this work, like you said, and gone through this process, and would be like a prime candidate to lead a team of folks, like in a similar way to how Captain America was the prime candidate to lead the Avengers as the one that had led people in battle, like of those, like had led different people and normal people, unlike Thor, who was just like showing up and throwing a hammer. Like it's you kind of see why it would make sense if they are going in this direction of like trying to not Marvel Studios trying to replicate the Avengers, but JLD's character Val trying to literally replicate the Avengers down to the real estate.
Well, and there's a shot on the trailer of Val like schmoozing at some party. She's got champagne and she's like chatting with someone, and it shows him in a suit and he's there as well. So again, a differentiating factor. He's clearly invited to this whatever political party, mm-hmm. but he's kind of like staring at her, trying to figure out like what she's doing or if he's not happy in how he's looking at her.
Yeah.
And it really makes you wonder if that's going to be part of this, is that he is all those things. And yet now, because he's done the work, he is now looking at this and he's going to start questioning some of the motives or something that they're assigned to do. And he's like, wait, that's not what I thought this would be. Or that's not what we're trying to do. And I just wonder if that at all plays into Brave New World ending with Sam Wilson saying he needs to start the Avengers again. And I think if Sam Wilson was going to start the Avengers again, Bucky would be one of his calls, or like he'd be on a short list of guys to help with the fighting. And I just wonder if that's it all tied, or he's viewing this and he's also got that in the back of his head. Like I could be an Avenger, or I could work for JLD, or I don't know if any of that's playing in, but it doesn't look like he's maybe fully on board with what she's trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's such an interesting place to take the character, because he was like, I don't think Bucky would have ever considered himself to be an Avenger. He did fight
In Infinity War.
He was obviously very involved in Civil War, which is sort of an Avengers movie. But I think it's, you know, he is kind of like Yelena in that he is dusted and gone during the blip, and then comes back and Steve immediately leaves. And you get the sense that like he kind of missed the opportunity to be the kind of hero that Steve was. Like they were born in the same time. They had like, they were best friends. They had almost parallel tracks going. And then Steve gets to kind of become this legendary hero, and Bucky is forced to be this villain. And by the time he's finally coming out and getting to a point where he can live his life, the one person that would understand what he's been through is now gone. And so there's something about him now being in a place to be on like a new Avengers team and to serve that kind of cap type role, but also having someone that's, again, kind of in the Nick Fury role from the first Avengers movie, but I think, you know, morally much more questionable. But even in the Avengers, you know, there are some very famous exchanges between Tony and Fury and Cap and Fury about the things he's doing that aren't above board and the secrets he's keeping. And you see that tension between like the kind of, we're going to do this like the right way and out in the open. And then the, well, no, you know, there are some things you don't understand. And we've got like, we have a lot of irons in the fire. And so you, JLD, I think, is going to lean even further into those tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is, like, we've talked about this now for years, and I love how much Thunderbolts has become the like the incarnation of the Dark Avengers stuff from the comics that I've talked about. Thunderbolts is a comic series that they're obviously pulling from. I'm not disregarding that, but I think it is very clear, like in the Dark Avengers comic, that is where you have these people move into Avengers Tower that are either villains or anti-heroes that kind of take on the Avengers mantle. And you have someone that is serving as like a new Nick Fury, essentially. And yeah, instead of Norman Osborn there, it's Val here, where it's like she kind of has the keys to the kingdom.
She bought Avengers Tower. We even get a shot of all of them in the elevator, the same elevator that the Avengers would be in. So it's obviously the parallel for sure. It's interesting because we don't know much else about her. Like literally, she's intentionally mysterious. In Falcon Winter Soldier, she gives a business card out that doesn't have any information on it at all.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost... Yeah, it's not Joker-esque. But you know what I mean? Like, she's trying to be mysterious. But then we do see that she's working for the government in Wakanda Forever. So
yeah, she's the CIA director, right?
She's working her way up the ranks.
Yeah.
With whatever she's doing. I love the call-out. It's a direct Nick Fury parallel, but with more moral gray area, essentially. Yeah. And these are all kind of parallels of the Avengers with more moral gray area.
Yeah,
basically.
But I like that it doesn't... Like, this is one of those things where I could imagine people saying that this is like an attempt to just redo the Avengers, but it's not that. It's they're clearly doing they're intentionally leaning into it.
No, it doesn't work without the Avengers.
Right. Right. And then but it also totally differentiates it from like Suicide Squad, which I thought was a great movie. Like James Gunn's Suicide Squad is excellent.
But those are like actual criminals in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like kind of like they're being sent out there as the people that are both expendable, but also like have no lines. And right. That's not like none of these people, I don't think, fit that description at this point. Certainly not like Bucky or John Walker or Yelena. Like they have all killed people and will. Mm-hmm. But they're not like murderous psychopaths.
Right. Good point. And I have two thoughts, and then I can wrap this thing. But the timing also matters, because I don't think you can get a film like The Thunderbolts any other era in the MCU, because the whole reason that The Thunderbolts can exist, or that if there's a threat that Bucky or Yelena or JLD feel like they need to turn to somebody, is because of the lack of the Avengers. If this happened in Age of Ultron, this is an Avengers task. But as she says in the trailer, there aren't Avengers. Like nobody's coming. The line is actual. Yeah. The Avengers aren't coming. Who's going to keep the American people safe? And I think that's the whole reason this can even exist, is because now they're like, well, they're not around. So who do we got? We got Red Guardian, and we could call Bucky, and we could call Yelena maybe. Like I've been working with her. So it's more of that vibe, which I think is perfect. Like it's the perfect vibe for this timing.
Oh, and I mean, I love it because, again, the kind of meta level there, like I'm sure that this was the plan to some degree from the moment they announced the Thunderbolts film. But, you know, we've been having this conversation within the fan community, within the like film culture community for years now, like, where's the Avengers movie? Like that this all feels disconnected. We're like missing this thing. And I love that they are. Like they're speaking to that both to like in universe citizens of like the world and New York, but also to viewers, where it's like, okay, well, here's this as kind of like a tongue in cheek thing, but also you understand, like it puts you in the position of the people that are living like in this universe. And I feel like that's cleverly done. And to your point, could really only be done now. Like if you came out with this even in like 2021, 2022, I don't think it would have the same, it wouldn't land the same, but you kind of feel the need for it.
off the top of my head, just quickly thinking, I think there are only three characters, and maybe you can make an argument for two or maybe one, that would even have to answer for where have you been? And I think it's like Spider-Man doesn't have to answer for it because Spider-Man kind of left the Avengers with his new spell and rebranding. I think you can make an argument that Captain Marvel and Thor are off planet and aren't really that in touch with America. Like they're doing other stuff.
Carol is on planet, but you don't know if people know that.
Well, what's the most recent we saw her in Captain, in Miss Marvel? And then the Marvels.
Because it ends with her in Louisiana.
But who knows how long she's staying there? Because I'm thinking about like the Shang-Chi post-cred scene where like she's again off-world doing stuff. And so, I think the argument there is that she's off-world a lot, even if she has a home base.
Yeah. I think that,
And
no one would know to call her either. Like, I think Fury's the only one that would have the ability to get in touch with Carol.
And then all the other heroes are either... I was going to say Bruce is the other one. Bruce is the other one where depending on what he's doing like on a different planet, that he would be like the face of what's left. But all the other heroes like don't either have like the power or the Avengers experience or like Wanda's presumed dead. Daredevil wouldn't be like ready for this level. You know, there's no other. So this is a perfect time for it. And honestly, I was going to say like Doctor Strange, you could maybe even make the argument that he's also multiverse hopping. Trying to figure out what's going on in that front, potentially.
Yeah, I think he's in the dark dimension, I guess.
Legit.
Yeah, so that's right.
Okay, so then the last thing to wrap this conversation is, and I don't want to get into the comics theories because that's not what today's about. Today's about what have we seen in the films? Like, what is fact of what we've seen?
Right.
But from the trailer, there's another character named Bob, and we think we know where that's going with what the trailer's hinting at and stuff. But the point is, if you've never seen a film before, you're not supposed to know who Bob is. So like, you don't need to know that much more about it. If you see the trailer, you go, who's Bob? That's okay. Cause you don't have to know. They're going to explain it in the film.
Yeah. I mean that there are some, like it's worth watching the trailers to see. And,
but you know what I'm saying? It's not pulling from a movie.
No. And I think you're more nervous about this than you are when we're normally talking about this stuff, because I feel like you've read something and maybe got inadvertently spoiled from comics background stuff.
The word that I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of one. But also I'm just thinking about like Becca Wilson when she says like, who are the Thunderbolts? My point is today's episode, you don't need me to tell you who Bob is. He's going to be a character in the film. The film will tell you. You know what I'm saying? If I'm catching you up, there's nothing to catch you up on other than theories or spoilers.
That's true. That's actually a really good transition, though. I will say, if you are curious about the character that Lewis Pullman is playing in this movie, who's like not really listed as a member of the Thunderbolts, but is clearly going to be kind of at the center of the plot in some way. I have been one. If you're not already subscribed to our newsletter, you should be if you're interested in all these kind of goings on,
like it's
the
free.
Kind of stuff we were talking about at the start. Yeah, it's free. It hits your email every week. Greg Arnold does a great job of putting it together. We've talked about this as folks that are no longer really on social media. This is a great, like, this is my way of kind of knowing what's going on in the MCU and like entertainment in general. But, one of our sponsors, our comic sponsor here, is Organic Price Books, and I've gotten a chance lately to drop in some recommendations for Daredevil Born Again, for Thunderbolts. There will be some coming up for Fantastic Four, and so I try to kind of note there what you should read if you would like some more context on the comics parts of these, specifically these characters that we don't necessarily have a lot of film context for. So if you're curious, there was a write-up in our most recent newsletter suggesting a comic that you can check out that is on the Organic Price Books website, and we'll kind of also give you a little glimpse into who the Sentry is.
That's
if
a
that
great,
is in fact who Bob is.
That's a great word. I love that. Okay, so this was kind of a mega episode, but I think it goes without saying, man. to wrap up, this movie has potential to be dealing with some really, really cool, fun, and important themes. One of my favorite things about WandaVision, which is my favorite Disney Plus show, is just that you're left to wrestle with grief. And it's a superhero show that you're like, oh man, this got really real for her. And when you put yourself in her perspective, there's actually some stuff you can learn. And it's like, it's sad to go through. And I think this movie is setting up to be kind of like that perfect MCU blueprint, in that I think it's going to be funny. And I think it's going to be really fun and action packed, but I think it's going to have a chance to be really emotionally heavy because of where all these characters are coming from and dealing with questions like Loki did of like, what is my purpose? And that's just, I love when they're able to do that in a superhero genre. So if you couldn't tell, I am really, really stoked for this movie and this season, and like, and getting
this
to
is
see
what
you
we've been stoked about for a while. It's fun. Like, we always get a little bit more stoked, honestly, for these things on the eve of a new project, because it's just fun seeing a new thing. But this is one that we've been looking forward to, this and Fantastic Four, for years now, and have kind of looked ahead. Like, I if we have time, we're gonna try to do another episode if we can, kind of talking about some of the like behind the camera stuff on Thunderbolts, because there are so many parts of this like cast and crew that get me so excited that I think we could have a whole separate episode on that, and on if people kind of want homework of things to watch to get prepared. But I think it's just going to be like, it feels like a special bunch of people coming together to make the movie, which I think is also such a kind of meta thing, because I feel like that's what the movie is about, like pulling these people from like random backgrounds, and whether that's like actors that you would not think of as being like the front headliner for a Marvel movie, or like the cinematographer from a Ghost Story, which is like
composers,
one of my favorite
from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, it's like, and again, like we said at the top, the director from Beef, like I think it's going to be special. It's going to be a lot of fun. And you and I are going to be doing a ton of fun stuff next week, in the lead up. So stay tuned for that as well.
Yeah. So just a reminder, you're listening to this episode hopefully on a Thursday. Next Monday, Robbie and I are going to see the film, but we're hoping to maybe record that episode he's talking about before seeing it, so that it still is spoiler free. And then we're going to be together and recording a lot of stuff. We will have our initial reactions to the film ready on Thursday night, which is right when the movie comes out. And then just a reminder, if you're in Austin, Texas, we're going to be talking about it even more live at Austin Books and Comics on Saturday, May 3. So lots of fun stuff. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. We gave you a lot of stuff, a lot of information, and a lot of things to do, but we appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast, making this podcast a part of your day, and making this community a part of your day. It means a lot to us. Thank you. We'll see you next time, hopefully in just a few days, right back here on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's FORHERS.com/talk. Tom Tandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through HERS, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, HERS has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's FORHERS.com/talk. Tompounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.